Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Terrence Howard. My mother was the cornerstone of our family. She shaped me as an actor, a musician, as a human being. So when she was diagnosed with colon cancer, it was like our whole family got cancer. And she died when she was only 56, so this is personal. Now hopefully my heartbreak is your wake-up call. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer, but you can prevent this disease. Screening finds precancerous polyps so that they can be removed before they turn into cancer. I've been screened. If you think that you're at an increased risk like I am, ask your doctor when to start screening. And if you're 50 or older, get screened. I don't have my mother anymore. So please, do everything that you can to stay around for yourself and for your family. Screening saves lives.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. I'm also on Instagram now. Lots of great pictures. If you tag me, you know you guys might win a prize. I give away books and movie tickets, iTunes downloads, all types of things. So I encourage you to follow or tag me or check me out on Facebook. Well, today I am blessed to have someone all the way across the world in Africa, in Nigeria, a wonderful author and essayist. She's a journalist, and she has written a wonderful book a while ago, but I came upon it, and I thought it was a great conversation piece. I do not come to you by chance. Today I'm speaking with Adobe Trisha Nwabani. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, you're doing better than most people do.
Well, thank you again for calling today and, you know, being willing to do the interview. I know we have a time difference and everything, so we had a lot of scheduling to do. So, you know, your book, as I mentioned before we got on air, has so many great topics to talk about. We could spend a whole hour discussing all the different issues that your book brings up. But one of the first ones I thought really stood out, and one of the main ones throughout the book, is the idea of family and the importance of family. Can you talk to the audience about, I mean, what you think the difference of family in Nigeria compared to maybe the family in America or Britain or, say, India? What do you think the differences are?
Well, I know that in Nigeria, family is usually first. Family comes first. No matter how successful you are, no matter how much of a difference you're making in other parts of the world, you could be the one who invented a cure for cancer or for HIV. But if your impact isn't felt directly by your family members and by your community, it's considered a waste. You could do all you've done around the world and return home, and nobody, you know, you'll be held in scorn. You'll be spoken of derisively. So that's how important family is here. People take it very important. So whatever accomplishments people are making, or whatever collections, here people tend to make sure that their families are impacted by their wealth, by their success, and that sort of thing. So it's really important here.
Yeah, you know, a lot of Africans that I know from, no matter where they are, they could be South African, you know, Niger, Mali, Morocco, it is always spoken of their family and sending money back to their family and, you know, calling their family and making sure that their family is well off, because as you mentioned, you know, no matter where they go, if their family is not taken care of and they can become the scorn of their neighbors and so on and so forth. I definitely have heard stories. And a lot of them, you know, talk about building a home. No matter where they are, they want to build a home in their, you know, in their town where they're from, you know, for their family. That, you know, that is something that's important. So that, yeah, I definitely agree with you about that. And here in America,
and
though,
I think another way it differs, or one way it differs, is, for example, if I get into government office tomorrow, I'll be expected to employ my cousins, my in-laws, my, you know, everybody, expected cousins and nephews and nieces. But in a place like the United States, it might be regarded as corrupt or as corruption if I do that. I don't think it's something that is accepted. But here, if you get into a position of power and you go to employ your people, people from your village, people from your family, it's regarded as a bad thing. People think, look at her, she went into a position of power and she did nothing for us. So those are the little differences.
Yes, definitely. If you're here in America, you know, they call it nepotism, and you can't just go hiring, you know, Johnny, second cousin from your wife who was, you know, married to your third sister on such and such side. You just can't do that.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, it is done. You know, it is still done. We say that it's not done, but it is done. You know, people's sons and daughters run their companies. You know, they bring in other people. But I guess there's more scrutiny, and it is kind of looked down upon, unless it's the daughter or son. You know, if it's daughter or son, that's different. But a cousin or something, it's not going to happen, you know. Now, let's also talk about, we just mentioned before we got on the phone call, which is a big issue. Is it okay to commit a crime and support your family and support the community? Is that okay? You know, talk to the audience about this issue in Nigeria and how that's looked upon.
What has happened over time, especially with the advent of people like the Trusta, the 419 standards, is that the definition of crime has been tweaked a little bit. So here, people will probably say, if you ask a question, to somebody on the street, they will say no. But then the difference is what you define as crime. It got to a point people were doing certain things, and you know, it gets to a point people don't see taking out of the national treasury to, you know, to pay medical bills for your mother's auntie's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see it. It's not really considered crime anymore. So that's where the problem is. So asking me, is this allowed? Is this okay to commit crimes to take care of your family? Where I would say no, but where our opinion, the opinion of the average Nigerian leader, is in the definition of crime. People have come to the point where they don't see things like that as crime. From my book, reading my book, for example, you probably have seen the transition in thinking of my characters, where they no longer saw fraud as crime. They just saw it as something, you know, just a legitimate source of income.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, where it comes really painstakingly obvious is when the character's father is sick, you know, and, you know, I just was, like, horrified. They had to go to, like, the guy is passed out. They don't know what's wrong with him. And he has to go to three different hospitals. They have to go get a letter from somebody who's a friend of the da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, by now, he would have been dead. You know, in America, I can call the ambulance in, you know, 20 minutes and no more than 30 minutes. Somebody's going to be here. I can get a cab. I can get an Uber, you know, to go to a hospital that's close to me. I don't have to ask for some letter or pay some fee. Can you talk about this? You know, is that a true depiction or was that an over-the-top depiction in your book?
Oh, my goodness. No. It's not over-the-top at all. In fact, it's actually worse than what I described.
Mm-hmm.
Here, people need to pay for everything. You can't get treated in the hospital. And in fact, a few weeks ago, I think about 3 weeks ago, there was a story that went viral in Cameroon, or some African country, I think it was Cameroon. A woman was brought to the hospital, and she died. Of course, they couldn't afford to treat her, and she died, or maybe she was brought to the hospital. Whatever the case, it was noticed that she was pregnant. The baby in her stomach was still kicking, even though she was dead. And the doctors and the nurses said, you have to pay before we even do anything. So people who were standing around, people who weren't medical personnel, had to take razors to slash through her stomach to rescue the baby that was in a dead woman's stomach. So reading that story, I read it on the BBC, and of course, Westerners were horrified. And it is indeed a horrifying story, but that's exactly the way to hear. No matter how dead you are on arrival or how much you're dying, you have to pay because the hospitals need the funds. And they complain that, like I mentioned in my book as well, they complain that they have too many people. Sometimes the doctors pay from their pockets, nurses pay from their pockets, and they can't keep doing that. And you have situations where people are in hospital, you have a baby or something, or you've been treated, and you can't pay your bills, and they detain you in hospital for months. Several times we get calls from people, people who work for you, and they say, oh, my sister's been in hospital, she had a baby, and the doctor, she's been in hospital for 5 months, we can't raise the bill. So that actually happens. So exactly what I just said. It actually works. You have to pay for things like that. So these are the things that make life a little bit more difficult. And then make people begin to question, do I have to be upright and then watch my family die? What's the point in being this moral person and having this degree, this certificate that can't make money? So people are forced sometimes to do things that they ordinarily wouldn't do.
Yes. Well, that's the same thing here in America in terms of drug dealing. You know, there are people who are drug dealers, and they support the community. They're also a police to the community, in a sense. You know, similar to in Brazil, in the favelas in Brazil, there are, you know, drug dealing gangs who do a better job of policing the community than the police do, because the people fear them, trust them, you know, because they're supporting them with this money from the drugs, you know. So like you said, you know, people are doing things that they normally wouldn't do, but in order to survive, you know, this is what they do. But that comes to the question of what is education? Why do we need an education? Is education important anymore? You know what I mean? What do you think about that question? Around the world, all the time, that's asked. Should I go to school? Should I become a vendor? You know, what should I do? You know?
That's definitely a question that's because I am, of course, educated, and I see the benefits of education. It's nothing else. It helps you think differently. But where people, those of us who are educated in Nigeria, have seen how less people value education, because over time they've seen that it doesn't necessarily solve their problems in terms of income, how much they earn, and how their lives change. I don't know what it's like. I'm not sure it's the same way exactly in other parts of the world, but in Nigeria, you might have first class degree, you might be the best graduating student. It doesn't guarantee that you'll get the right job or you'll be able to feed your family. You still need to know the right people, usually, not all the time, but usually most of the time, you need to know the right people, you need to have the right connections. So people are beginning to question the value of education. And so we find more young people saying, I don't need any thinking. If I can just get some way to make money, then I don't need to go to school. And I think there's actually a character in my book who comes to that decision. He says, well, here are people making money from advanced fee fraud 419. Why do I need to go to school when I can just become an apprentice and just start making my money now? So we're at the point where these things have been so ingrained that some of us are trying to persuade people to still go to school. It's important. It helps. Even if you're going to be anything else, you're going to be tomorrow, okay, even if you're going to be a drug dealer, it's an education first. So unfortunately, that's something that I wish would change. I wish people's education would have a direct relation to how much they earn and how their life improves later in the future, but it's not really what's happening now.
Yeah, we have similar situations, not as bad, I think, but in America, the question still remains, you know, should I go to college? Because college here in America is crazy expensive. It's absolutely ridiculous. And people are in debt, you know, forever and ever. You know, it's like buying, you know, 40 houses in order to get a good education. I will say most degrees, mostly the science degrees, you know, IT, they definitely pay off. You get a, you know, bachelor's, you'll get a certain amount. You get your master's, you get your PhD in some kind of computer science or engineering here in America, you definitely will have fat pockets. You know what I mean? That's not an issue. Some other degrees may not, you know, if you want to be a social worker, you know, you want to be a philosopher, you know, something like that, you know, it may not, you know, pay off or something like that. But, I mean, I think that it's important to still have critical thinking skills. You know what I mean? If you don't have critical thinking skills, then, you know, you can't really change the world in a dramatic way, I think. You know what I mean? In the long run, you know?
Well, we have a situation in Nigeria where we have people, over time, the least educated people are in the top position. So what they're doing is hiring the people with the brain. So you go to Harvard, do all your education, come back to Nigeria, and your boss is somebody who can read and write, who has an education. So these are the things people are talking. Yes, it's great to have critical thinking, but they need their needs. They want their needs met now, and their immediate problems solved. So it's difficult for people to think of them when it's so difficult to even go from one thing to the next.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the women in your book. You know, you have some different characters. You have, like, prostitutes in there, and then you have some really educated women in there. And some of the goals that women have in the book, you know, some are to be educated, you know, some are to be married. What do you think the role of a Nigerian woman is in relation to men today? How is it How do you think it is? Is it still, you know, they're behind the man? Are they next to the man? Or are they moving in front of the man?
Most women, not necessarily all women, but most women just won't feel complete until they have a mistress in front of their name. So most people just want to be married. That's the way a lot of women are. It doesn't. I'm not saying every single woman, no. But the majority of women, and then we have a select as well that tends to look down on or tends to not give as much, accord as much respect to a woman who isn't married, who isn't a mistress at a certain age. So we have people in my book, like Ola, making a decision to abandon her. Okay, and then, of course, we have women who feel that marriage should improve their life as well. A lot of women feel, if I get married, it should improve my life. So, and we have, and many families see a woman as an investment. We're sending her to school so she can get a good husband who will eventually take care of all of us. You know, that sort of thing. So we have women like all in my book who, of course, get married from an educated man, as educated as she is, chooses a non-educated husband who's wealthy over her boyfriend who is a first-class chemistry graduate of chemical engineering, because she knows that the uneducated man is wealthy enough to take care of her siblings.
Yeah, and her family. Right. That's interesting. Now, let's talk about the idea of beauty, because in the book you bring up this issue of skin bleaching. A couple times it stood out to me, and, you know, we have all different shades of African in the diaspora around the globe, but no matter where you go in the globe, there's always this price of, you know, being darker can be bad, but being lighter is better, you know. But then, you know, that can be flipped, because sometimes if you're light by chemical means, it's negative. You know, because it's fake. You know, it's not the real you. It's better to be you. Even King asked the young lady to take out her weave, you know, because he wanted to see her. You know, he didn't want to see this fake person, you know. Do you think the bleaching is increasing or decreasing in Nigeria?
It's increasing. I mean, we read articles about it every day in the papers, and I think there was some research done by, I'm not sure whether it was the World Bank, that talked about the number of women in Nigeria who bleach. A number of women here bleach. But this, I think the thing is, usually I know when I read articles about bleach in the U.S. media, it's in terms of people wanting to be like white people. But here, I think it's very different. The majority of people here are dark skin. So bleaching is a way of people to standing out. I have friends who 2 weeks to a wedding, when they have a huge society wedding to attend, they start bleaching their skin 2 weeks in advance because they want to just stand out at the wedding. They want to be the yellowest person. So when they see everybody them. So the reason people bleach is what I think we haven't started discussing, because everybody assumes we want to be like white people. Black is, white is better than black. But I don't see it as a motivation for many people I know who bleach. They just want to stand out. And then the 419 scammers want to have very flashy lifestyles. They had flashy cars with odd colors, flashy shoes, and they wanted flashy women. So they started going after these girls who bleached because the women were yellow and, like I said, stand out in a world where everybody is blacker. So these are the people are bleaching in Nigeria, and I think they'll keep bleaching because they have these reasons why they want to bleach. It's not necessarily about wanting to black his bag or wanting to look like another person. I think it's just for many people that stand out factor. They want to look different. They want to hit the, you know, everybody to turn their heads. They want to just grab attention as soon as they get to the room. And mainly the light skin, at least here, tends to accomplish that more than dark skin. Unless, of course, you are dark as Lupita Nyong'o or something, in which case, you're the color of your skin. Kind of a light skin attract.
Now, but don't they concerned about the chemical, the effects of the chemical that are bad for them, for their skin?
Well, what I really see, I mean, they should be, but then I understand the better products are less dangerous. I think if we understand that, if black people understand that women will bleach anyhow, so why don't we focus, rather than telling people don't bleach for this, why don't we focus on improving the quality of the product so they are less dangerous on the skin? People will bleach anyhow. People will want bigger boobs, bigger bum, and all those things. So let's focus on making the process safer. And then we can say, we can tackle the reasons why people bleach. But they will always bleach. I mean, I've been in my journal in office. I know people who bleach since I was in university, and they're still bleaching today. But then the more they earn, the better products they buy, and, you know, the more expensive the product, and I understand the less damaging those products are. So let's just focus on getting better products out. I think that's the way to go about it.
Yeah. Now, what about politics? Can we talk a little bit about politics? Because the main character is working for his, you know, uncle, and the guy is the massive criminal, and he decides he's going to be a politician. It's like, wow, you know, like, how in the world? And all the people in the community are going to support him, and he was going to win. He was going to win. I don't want to give everything away in the story, you know, but, you know.
America. Well, you people have, I know things are changing a little bit with your letters coming up. You have characters that are not a typical presidential candidate kind of character, but here it's common. People are not interested. People are willing to forgive. They just want who can solve our problems. They're not interested in how many wives you've had, how many girlfriends and concubines, or what you did to make your money. In fact, a number of politicians have checkered history. They're like the people in my home. A number of politicians here were drug dealers in America, convicted. I'm not spreading rumors. These are people who've been convicted of crimes in America. Some of them were 419 fraudsters. It's common. People are not interested in those things a lot of the time because they just want people who can solve their problems, people who can gather them and say, here, have these bags of rice for Christmas, have these, that sort of thing. So those are the things people are. And then, of course, even for individuals, they're thinking, who can deliver? Who can solve our problems? Who knows what we need?
Yeah. Well, we have this craziness going on now with our election here, where we have, you know, Donald Trump. I know you heard of Donald Trump and his craziness. And, you know, he has a lot of supporters. And, you know, you think, where did all these crazy people come from that are supporting this guy? But you know what? They believe in him because he thinks the same way they do.
Exactly.
You know?
So for the first time, America is experiencing what a lot of us in African countries have been experiencing. You have someone that some of you think is crazy, but then there are a lot of people who think, he can solve our problems. So that's the way it's been in many African countries. Those of us who are educated and who think, you know, who've been taught to think a different way, are looking for people who understand policy and who have this degree and that degree. But for people who just want practical things, he thinks like us, he understands what we want, and he can solve our problems. So unfortunately, people like us are in the minority, and it doesn't happen in America. So it's amusing for people like me to watch it happen. So you have a bit of the African experience now.
Yeah, well, you know, I pray to God that Trump does not become president, but, you know, he's given a
really
good
race. May
the best
man win, or the best woman.
The best man, the best woman. Right, you know. Now, do you think the world is ready for a female president of the United States? How do they look upon us in Nigeria? Do you think your government would interact with a woman president?
Oh, why not? Really, I mean, I promise it's acting with people like Angela Merkel in Germany. If there's anywhere, we're used to America doing all sorts of interesting things, so we know that it can happen. If there's anywhere where it can happen in America. I have a lot of fans here. I know a lot of people who just love her. Something where it'll be interesting anyhow, whether it's Trump or whether it's Clinton, it'll be exciting for people like us who come to America, huge entertainment.
So can we see another book coming from you anytime soon, or you're just writing being a journalist?
Yes, you will, but at the right time, everybody will know.
Okay. Yes. Well, we kind of ran close to time, but just real quickly, I've been reading some of the articles you're writing in the BBC and some other places, and you're talking about Boko Haram, and for us, it's just horrific over here to think that 100-some girls were taken from a village just like poof. Like, how could that possibly happen? Like, where nobody saw anything, nobody knew anything? You know, I think some of the issues that I mentioned before are the problems with the infrastructure in these areas. The villages are poor. They, like you said, they just are looking for somebody to give them what they need, but they didn't want their daughters taken away. Well, talk to the audience a little bit about that.
Well, the thing is, there have been thousands of girls kidnapped even before the girls, the famous ones from Chibokwe kidnapped. So it's been happening, sad as it is. So it's not something new. It's sad, but it's not something. And then if you go to that part of the country, you understand why it's easy to happen. It's part of a country that has been, it's a region, it's the most backward region of the country in terms of development. And the land is vast. Like, most of the places are hamlets. Like Chibok, for example, is made up of lots of little villages. So you can understand how that kind of thing happens. When you live in a city like Lagos or Abuja, you can't understand how it happens, how people can go into a school and just chop girls out. But when you go to the home and see how exposed, you know, how bad the region is, it makes sense. It can happen. It shouldn't have happened, but it can happen. And, yes, it did happen. So thousands of girls. Fortunately, the Nigerian government has rescued thousands between March last year and now. Thousands of girls have been rescued. They haven't found the famous Chibo girls yet, and I hope they do someday soon. But the government has made some efforts, thankfully. And I've spoken to some of the girls who've been rescued already. Like I said, typically, you know, from really backward parts of the country.
Well, I really appreciate you talking to us today, and I can't wait for your next book. Please don't keep it under wraps too long. I hope you have a great day. And, again, I just want to say thank you for taking the time out of your day to discuss your book and the different topics in the book. And I wish you much success.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, thank you so much. You have a good day, okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with the author of I Do Not Come to You by Chance, Adobe Nwabani. She's a Nigerian artist, essayist, journalist, humorist, as she put on her page. So I'm going to be giving away a copy of her book. So you got to follow me at Joy Keys on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, or check me out on Instagram. Stay tuned. Next, I'm going to be speaking with two wonderful, I guess, activists, if you will, dealing with autism in the African-American community. So stay tuned for that.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.